Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cardinals broadcaster and Schnucks shopper Dan McLaughlin. Schnucks would like to thank everyone during this difficult time. That includes those that are working in the stores. As you can imagine, during this time, Schnucks employees are putting in long hours around the clock to best serve our community. So the next time you're in Schnucks, tell them thanks and that you appreciate them. Let them know how much we appreciate their efforts, because we will all get through this together. You learn so much on the business side of sports from Dr. Patrick Risch, part of the sports business program at WashU. You can also see what he provides at patrickrisch.com, also author of They Shoot, They Score, and it's the perfect time to talk about the business side of sports when you have no sports and what that means for teams, for players, and for the community in general. Patrick, always great to visit with you. How are things?
Good, Dan.
You hanging in there?
I am. You know, there's a lot of people that obviously are going through a lot of hardships. I feel somewhat fortunate in the sense that, you know, almost kind of like the banking industry, the academic world, there is a little bit of insulation. Although, you know, we learned today, as was discussed locally, that there have been a lot of furloughs that are going to take place this summer at WashU. So that being said, you know, all in all, feel fairly protected and insulated, but it's tough sledding for a lot of people right now.
There's no question. In sports and what's happening right now, give me just your general impression of just the hit economically that sports is going to have, of not only for fans, not only for players, but teams, everybody in general. How big is this hit?
Billions. We're talking billions of dollars lost, never to be recovered. The impact, Dan, is clearly you and I have never lived through anything like this. And it's times like these where you really realize the interconnectedness, not only of the sports industry in and of itself, but then the sports industry with other aspects of the local economy. If we just first start with the sports industry, and you work in media, and you know how integral media's role is in the business of sports. You know, the networks pay for rights fees, and the networks receive advertising dollars, and they receive, and teams receive money from sponsors, and all of these revenues help determine, in the other sports except for baseball, salary caps. Even in a sport like baseball, discussions of will we play in a bubble city, and one of the major hindrances are going to be, are the players going to be willing to take 30 or 40% off their salaries because the teams are losing 30 and 40%. So that's, you know, the ecosystem of the sports industry that I don't know if people really appreciate until it's gone. And now you see that when one stream of money is gone, it really impacts many. And then, Dan, as you know, and you're part of this economy, that there are people that, you know, are whether it's temp workers that are, selling food and beverage at the game, ushers, or broadcasters. You see a hit in their pocket when there's not a game. And of course, this means that they can't spend money in the community like they're used to. So this hurts local hotels, restaurants, retail, and the like. So it's a cluster bleep on a scale that none of us have ever seen.
Yeah, in a way, it's a house of cards right now, isn't it?
It sure is.
When you think of St. Louis, and we've had, you know, such great success as a fan base watching the Cardinals year in and year out, 3 million fans coming through the gates, the Blues winning the Stanley Cup last year, Sports Commission bringing in big events. What is it in terms of an economic impact of what's going on in our town?
Well, for the individual teams, especially the Cardinals, Dan, they have the greatest financial exposure, in my opinion, because clearly they didn't get a chance to start their season. And if they end up going through the season not playing any home games or not having any fans, not selling tickets, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in lost revenue, lost ticket revenue, lost revenue at the ballpark on game day. Hockey is buttressed a little bit from the standpoint that they finished most of their season, but they're still losing ticket revenue now, media revenue from games that are not aired. And then you talk about the spillover effects. I felt very badly. You know, the people, the sports commission, just as well as I do, people like Frank Viverito, Chris Roseman, Mark Schreiber, they do a wonderful job bringing events to this community and then putting them on when they get here, you know, operating them. Well, of course, we lost not only first, second round NCAA in March, but we also lost the Olympic trials in gymnastics in June. Now, my hope is that with the Olympics pushed back to 2021, that we will be able to slot back in and just find an empty date for the Enterprise Center and be able to still contest that. And as it relates to first and second round NCAA, well, we'll probably be granted another, opportunity to host in the next bid cycle, but that's 4 years down the road. So again, I just think about the sports commission. I think about all the employees, some of the same people that work Blues games and Cardinals games. That's a bonus for them, Dan. When they work these events that don't come into town every year, that's like a bonus to them. So they don't get their bonus this year because those events were canceled.
When you look at baseball as an industry, do you see, and I think the Cardinals clearly are not part of this group that I'm about to mention, but do you see some teams having the financial ability to withstand what could be a non-season this year?
It's a great question. You think off the top of your head of markets like, clearly Tampa and Miami, where those two organizations usually rank near the bottom in terms of financial viability. You put the Kansas City Royals in there as well. If they're actually losing money, then one, I guess, could argue that maybe they're saving money by not playing this year.
Right.
But at the end of the day, clearly, as you mentioned, there are some markets that are very much going to be challenged. And, when you look across the entire landscape of sports, it's not terribly surprising that, look, if the XFL, basically now that league has been dissolved largely because of what happened with this pandemic and the impact on Vince McMahon and his other business, WWE, what's going to happen to these other leagues that are, to one degree or another, somewhat financially fledgling? What's going to happen to the WNBA? What's going to happen to this, the National Women's Soccer League? I really worry about, and minor league baseball, Dan, you know as well as I do that during the offseason, there was debate about, are they going to contract the number of minor league teams as a cost savings measure? This is before the pandemic. So now what kind of exposure do these minor league teams have? It's going to be sweeping.
When you have been able to dive into the numbers, what really stands out to you outside of, you mentioned billions. Billions is going to be lost with a B. But I know you've done a ton of research with this. What's really stood out for you as you've been able to dive into this?
Well, you break it down into various buckets. And I think the one thing that really jumps out, we haven't had any official cancellations yet, Dan, with respect to football. But all these losses that we have talked about, I did an estimate of what's the loss in ticket spending and fan spending on game day for XFL, NBA, hockey, and if we lose half of Major League Soccer and half of baseball. That number was about $3.3 billion just on those things. Forget about TV money. Forget about partnership money, corporate partnership money. But if you look at football, if football were to miss a quarter of their season, they would lose approximately across all their different media, all their different revenue streams, about $2.5 billion. So that's almost two-thirds of what all those other five leagues combined are losing. So the point being is that is really kind of the next level. And I guess the other level, as it relates to a lot of people talking about college football, I think that's in bigger danger, to be honest, Dan, than pro football, because with college football, there is a situation that's hand in hand with just students being enrolled. If you don't have students back to college campuses in the fall, then how can you justify bringing these kids back to campus to train and then play in games, even if it's in front of no fans? I do think that right now, pushing the season back potentially till February of 2021, the college football season, is a very real possibility. Because why? Because these athletic departments, they rely on football revenues to finance a large share of their overall athletic department.
When you think about we hear, okay, let's play games without fans. And you mentioned it specifically with baseball, how important it is to have fans in the seats. So if you can maybe give our listeners an idea percentage-wise why that's so important, number one, and as a follow-up, then as you're going to probably tell me, roughly 30, 35%, 40% of revenue for owners is coming through people being at the game, then some would say, well, then why put the games on TV? Well, TV generates a lot of money. So if you can dive into a little bit of those two aspects of this and why it makes sense to maybe play without fans and then the loss of fans and what it means for baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you touched upon it. With every sport except for hockey, you're talking about roughly 60% of your league-wide revenue comes from the media contracts. So that's why you want to still have those games, even if it's not in front of fans, because that is your largest bucket of revenue. Obviously, teams would love to be able to play in front of their fans and generate ticket revenue and game day spending. But as you noted, that is typically a smaller piece of the pie relative to the media revenue, usually somewhere between 30 and 40% of total revenue, just depending upon, you know, essentially which league you're talking about. So that's the reason why you still want to go ahead and play these games. And also, when you play those games and you're on television, well, guess what? You can still sell advertising. You can still have activations with your corporate partners. Maybe not the same way you would if you're at the ballpark or at the arena or at the stadium, but it's still some additional revenue that you can generate. One other thing you asked me earlier that was kind of a learning moment for me is, you know, I initially thought, well, geez, if we got everyone just watching, like, for instance, the Last Dance documentary, the first two episodes set records for the highest rated documentary ever on ESPN. And it wasn't even close. So you would think that would lead to potentially higher ad rates and so on and so forth. However, if we end up having a very crowded fall sports schedule, then that excess glut of supply of content is actually going to potentially drive down those prices. But nonetheless, it still would be revenue that the networks can generate, and you can still have some revenue coming in with the corporate partnerships, with the brands and the companies that are partnering with teams and leagues.
This may be a tough question for you to answer, but I know you've studied and looked at CBA. You know, the combination of a league and the players' association of the various leagues coming together, getting an agreement, getting on the ice, getting on the field, whatever the case may be. The appetite for players to come back, in your opinion, what do you think that's going to be, with or without fans? And also with that, do you think they understand or will fully understand that everybody's getting a haircut, so you may get a haircut too? Do you think they get that?
Well, I have to think, Dan, that they do, but it's just a question of, you know, again, all of these athletes have relatively short careers compared to the average worker. And so for them, and then the opportunity cost, what's their next best alternative? It's usually considerably lower than what they're making as a pro athlete.
Sure.
So my sense is, though they might understand it intuitively, they certainly don't want to feel compelled to do it. And if their contract allows them to try to stick to where they're earning now, they're going to try to. But I would say this to you. Again, if you look at the three big sports, basketball, hockey, and baseball, the three big sports that are currently on hiatus that should be playing, the decision is much harder for baseball because they're losing a much larger percentage of their games, their regular season games, and therefore their revenues. And this bubble solution that they're talking about, Dan, you know, again, I can understand why the big money guys don't want to necessarily take a 40% cut if they're going to be away from their families and there's still a risk of potentially contracting something. I could see younger guys that are hungrier, that are maybe still building up their lifetime wealth, might be more willing to go in and play, especially if they're not married and so on and so forth. But, you know, just imagine being sequestered in Phoenix, Arizona for 3 or 4 months. And granted, there are other people in this country that make even bigger sacrifices, that are away from their families for 6 months, a year, that are overseas and that sort of thing. But I can understand why baseball players may not want to go down that road. Hockey, yeah, and basketball, a little bit different just because it's a shorter time commitment that they would be sacrificing.
In terms of the MLS, I think it's kind of fascinating where I look at it a couple of ways. The league, where are they with, you know, their financial wherewithal to take this kind of hit. I think that in St. Louis, if you know things are fine in a couple of years and MLS fires up, it's one of the sports that you might be able to go to and really in a celebration of coming back, if you will, for all of us. In terms of MLS here in St. Louis, what do you think about this and how it's affected business for them? Like it has all the other sports, but they're unique because they're building a stadium. They're going to be new to the league, just all those things. What do you think about MLS going forward from this point on, especially as it pertains to St. Louis?
Yeah, let me answer that. Actually, Dan, we had a wonderful panel of speakers about 3 weeks ago. It was actually our MLS expansion day. We had speakers from the St. Louis organization, as well as Charlotte and Sacramento, who are also coming on board here in the next couple of years. Charlotte next year, Sacramento coming in with us in 2022. I can tell you that the representative from the St. Louis team talked about how, you know, obviously right now they should be in the midst of hiring, slowly but surely, hiring full-time staff. They should be, you know, launching their new, you know, the team name and team logo and team colors. None of these things can happen right now because it's just not appropriate. It would be tone deaf to do so. And clearly they're not going to hire people right now. Well, this is when you want to start doing those things, ramping up. And to some degree, I feel bad for the folks in Charlotte in the sense that they are actually coming into Major League Soccer next year. So they've got that much less time to ramp up. Then you talk about the construction aspect. So, you know, construction in a lot of industries is still moving forward, but that doesn't mean it's moving forward at the same pace. I was told by Ben Gumpert, who's the president of the Sacramento Republic FC, that in their case, they've experienced about 15 to 20% of their construction staff not coming to work, either because they're caring for somebody else or maybe, you know, they themselves got ill. So, I mean, the other issue is a supply chain issue, Dan. If you got supplies coming in from various parts of the world, well, right now that's not possible. So that can also slow down the development stage. So with respect to St. Louis, a combination of if they're having those same construction issues, it slows down the process, which is going to mean, are you going to be ready for March 2022? And unfortunately, the whole kind of hype machine, getting people excited for for the logo and for the new name and for the colors, that's on pause, and that's not ideal.
Not ideal at all. The U.S. Supreme Court Monday ruled it will not hear a petition by the Rams and their owner, Stan Kroenke, and his team is to settle the relocation lawsuit in arbitration. So this is the high court's decision, and that basically means a lawsuit will either be settled out of court or head to trial in St. Louis Circuit Court next year, which I think is October of 2021. Just your thoughts on what that decision means going forward as you evaluate it from a sports business perspective.
Well, I'm just glad that I don't have a bunch of random St. Louis fans on a Zoom meeting, because they would probably go into the Kroenke sucks chant just the way they were doing at the Battle Hawks game.
I can do it too if you want me to. It's fine. I feel just fine doing it. So anyway, go right ahead.
A one-man chorus.
Exactly.
Look, first of all, I think that was not surprising for the Supreme Court to even consider, you know, hearing Kroenke's case. I mean, again, so they have better things to do with their time than worry about that. The thing that I wonder is, and I know that you've got a couple different parties, including the city of St. Louis, St. Louis County. If there is, we basically are down to two things now. Are we going to have this trial play out, which what I've read, it wouldn't start until the fall of 2021, or at some point would there be a settlement? And it really kind of depends on how much money and who is that money going to, and can that money be used for good? Is that money that the city, the county, and other damaged parties need? I know that there's other tentacles to the broader story of litigation in this case. I know that there's been a settlement already that some of the former seat holders are getting some monies back for monies that they deposited. Look, at the end of the day, I know people in St. Louis want blood, and I can't say that I blame them. And so on the one hand, I can see why people would want to see this come to the light of day and hold people like Kroenke and others with the organization, hold their feet to the fire. I would just ask the question, if we're talking about a sizable settlement, And if something can come that is good, that's applied to, you know, the city isn't replete with cash, Dan. So are there things that can be done positively rather than have to, you know, go through a 2-3-4 year additional process before any monies were realized? So I'm conflicted on that front.
Yeah, I kind of am too, especially in the day and age that we're in and with the economic battles that we're all going to go through concerning, especially from the city front with the coronavirus. You got to wonder if you settle and it's worth a lot of money. I mean, it's got to be worth a ton. Is that better off than going for blood, as you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I mean, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about, you know, $200 million, $500 million, possibly in excess of $1 billion in a settlement? As much as it would thrill multiple people, local citizens and people in the local media who felt like they were directly lied to by members of the Rams organization back in the day. Again, I balance that versus, okay, well, that's great. And it would be great to see egg on their face. But if it's going to take you 5 years plus to see a dime of any of that, then is it worth that wait, especially if the money could be put to good use in the short term?
Great stuff, Patrick. What's the best way that folks can read your work, see your work? And I know you have a book out as well. I actually have just started reading it, so I'm actually enjoying it. So tell us about the book and also best place that folks can read your various updates.
I try to put everything at patrickrische.com, Patrick, R-I-S-H-E.com. You can access any of my social media feeds there, as well as access to how to get the book. Yeah, the book, Dan, was a fun project. I guess it was between January and May of 2018. I interviewed 50 different people in the sports industry, everybody from team owners like Joe Lacob of the Golden State Warriors, Mark Cuban of the Dallas Mavericks, spoke to several people in all across the sports spectrum, from college athletic directors like Joe Castiglione from Oklahoma, people in the sports analytics world that, of course, are knowledgeable about how you use analytics to sell tickets and marketing and everything else. It was really, really a great project. And by doing it as an ebook, it's a little bit more interactive. So people that go through and read it, if there's more depth that's required or if someone wants to dig deeper, they can click on links and see more information. So it was really fun. It was published in August 2018 and been really proud of it and been using it in class.
Awesome stuff. Hey, Patrick, thanks so much. I appreciate your time. I know you're busy. This is a real busy time for some, not for others, but for you guys, it certainly is with what's happening in the sports world, and I appreciate you taking out a few minutes for me.
No problem, Dan. Thank you.
Luke Hughes, we are St. Louis.
Dan McLaughlin here to tell you about the hometown automotive family I trust the most, the Lou Hughes Automotive Network, and you know they are St. Louis. Lou Hughes has been a part of St. Louis for over 7 decades. They're proud to support St. Louis and the surrounding areas with cars, youth, sports, and charitable efforts. 14 brands, 10 locations. Just visit Hughes.com to start shopping today.
Lou Hughes.